Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, October 28, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Coronavirus. Myers, COVID numbers get worse for Midland Memorial Hospital, by Stuart Doreen. The statistics don't lie about the impact COVID-19 is having at Midland Memorial Hospital. Of the 186 patients in the hospital Tuesday morning, 52, or 27.9%, are COVID-19 positive. Of the 245 total beds at Midland Memorial, 21.2% are occupied by those with COVID. The 52 COVID patients are close to the highest occupancy that the hospital has dealt with since the pandemic, said Midland Health CEO Russell Myers Tuesday. The highest number might be 57, he said. Of those 52 COVID patients, 29 are in critical care and 26 are on ventilators. Myers said 32 patients total currently are on ventilators and 72% of the hospital's ventilators are in use. Myers said the hospital's workforce is more and more challenged as the outbreak spreads in the community. There are 29 employees that are COVID positive and 5 others quarantining for other reasons. There are also another 41 self-monitoring due to exposures but have not tested positive or have not developed symptoms. Myers said MMH and the community are fortunate that the state and FEMA have provided 49 nurses and 8 respiratory therapists as the COVID-19 numbers are as high as they have been at any time during the pandemic. Myers said Tuesday that Midland Health tested more than 900 people last week, another high for 1 week during the pandemic. He also said the 23% positivity rate is the highest in weeks. We have now been on a run of 7 straight days where the percentage of the patients we've tested has increased, he said. The percentage 7 weeks ago was 7.5%. Also, the number of new cases that the Midland Health Department has reported has topped 100 during each of the last 6 reports. The 232 new cases reported Monday was the highest total reported on any day, but Myers said it represents totals from testing on 2 different days and that the average is consistent with the spike currently in place. And this week's numbers don't show any signs of abating, Myers said. It's rampant in our community. The disease is spreading across the whole region. We have as many hospitalized patients as we've ever had, not only here but everywhere else. Myers said El Paso is using 43% of its 2,000 available beds on COVID patients. It's a full-blown crisis there, he said. In the Amarillo region, its 7-day average is 19% COVID hospitalizations to total hospital beds, and they are at 21.4% in the Lubbock region, according to Myers. He said the Midland region has a much lower percentage because more rural hospitals and their hospital beds are included in the total count. That means certain state restrictions, including how open a business or restaurant might be, aren't required in Midland as in other parts of the state. And so, even though we're showing only in the 7.5% range region-wide, Myers said, here in the cities, our percentages are much higher than that. And so the crisis is just about as real here as it is in El Paso and Lubbock and Amarillo and all over the region. It's concerning for sure, but it's not surprising, Myers said, and we would expect that it would continue to impact our hospital census. I don't think there's any question about that. It does not feel like this is going down in the immediate future as we continue to see more cases.
Hello, this is Michael, reading an additional article from the front page of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, October 28th. Coronavirus. New ninth floor should help MMH with COVID spike, by Stuart Doreen. Midland health officials are close to adding more usable space at Midland Memorial Hospital. Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said Tuesday that he expects a new floor to open up maybe by late next week, to provide more beds as the community deals with a rising number of COVID-19 patients. Myers said the ninth floor has been in the works for a while and that funding from FMH and Scarborough Foundations made the project a reality. FMH Foundation provided $18 million and Scarborough Foundation funded $5.812 million for the design, changes, a construction acceleration, and additional critical care equipment, according to previous Reporter Telegram articles. Myers called the potential opening good news, as MMH's capacity is being tested by the number of people with COVID-19. On Tuesday, 52 of the 186 patients in the hospital had COVID-19. Myers said that capacity currently is 245. He said the ninth floor will provide another 48 beds. He also said the ninth floor will be the hospital's primary COVID medical unit. All the rooms are capable of managing negative pressure, Myers said. Negative pressure is essentially where the air in the room is maintained within the room and exhausted to the outside, so you don't get airflow out of the room into the hallways or above ceiling space. Really the ideal environment for patients with respiratory infections. COVID patients who are determined to be more critically ill will remain in the critical care unit. On Tuesday, there were 29 COVID patients in the CCU. Myers said Tuesday that the West Texas and Panhandle regions continue to be hit hard by the latest COVID-19 spike. That has put a premium on space and resources. He said MMH is actually doing well when it comes to personal protective equipment, the antiviral drug remdesivir, and convalescent plasma. Myers and Dr. Larry Wilson, chief medical officer for Midland Health, both talked about the impact the current spike is having on resources, beds, equipment, and staff. Wilson explained that the streak of 100 case reports, 6, means that stress will continue. It's simple math, Wilson said. We have over 100 patients getting sick a day. 15 or so of those are going to end up in the hospital or needing hospital care at some level, and 5 will end up in critical care. And if they do end up in critical care, the likelihood is they're going to be there for 2 to 3 weeks. They don't get better quick. Myers addressed the increased number of patients, including COVID-19 patients, saying the hospital does have a multi-step surge plan that allows for the opening and staffing of additional beds if needed. He said MMH is feeling the impact of having 29 employees who are currently COVID-19 positive and another 41 more employees who are self-monitoring due to exposures. He said the hospital will continue to ask the state and FEMA for resources, like the 49 nurses and 8 respiratory therapists who have been provided thus far. He said steps the hospital is taking include the suspension of inpatient surgery. This is a very difficult time, Myers said. We have as many hospitalized patients as we've ever had, not only here, but everywhere else. We're doing our best to be open to transfer when we can, but that's pretty rare because we are so full. Myers repeated what has been a mantra for health officials for months. Midland County residents can control how much COVID-19 spreads. We can't emphasize enough how important it is to wear your mask at every opportunity, any place you are, Myers said. Unless you are alone, wear your mask. Wash your hands, socially distance, and avoid crowds. If you have to be in a crowd for any period of time, make sure you're in a ventilated area or outside. This more than any time through the course of this pandemic. These are the most important things for all of us to do. This thing is growing pretty rapidly.
This article is entitled Health. Breast cancer survivor advocates for putting health before career. Editor's note: The Reporter Telegram is profiling breast cancer survivors in the community for the month of October, which is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. This article is written by Caitlin Randall. Melanie Horton waited a year after finding a lump in her breast to make a doctor's appointment because of her demanding work schedule. Now, she encourages women to make their health their top priority. It wasn't until Will Horton switched jobs after 10 years working at a bank that she had time to see her doctor. And even then, she had to wait another 2 months before she was enabled to enroll in health insurance with her new company. "That's something that I will never allow to happen in my life again," she said in an interview. I'll never allow a job to take priority over my personal health. Being diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer in June 2016 came as a shock to Horton, who was 34 years old at the time and didn't have a family history of the disease. She was given the choice to have a lumpectomy or double mastectomy, and made the decision to have a mastectomy 2 months after her diagnosis based on genetic testing results. Having a bilateral mastectomy gave her peace of mind that the cancer would be less likely to return, she said. Following the surgery, Horton had 20 weeks of chemotherapy. She's been cancer-free for 4 years now, but still receives a hormone therapy shot every 12 weeks and takes a daily hormone therapy pill to prevent a relapse. Despite the gap between first finding a lump and seeing a doctor, Horton said she was thankful the process of having a biopsy and receiving test results moved so quickly after her initial appointment. "I didn't really have an opportunity to sulk about it," she said. "I just took the information that was given to me and carved out a plan to get it fought and move on." Horton serves on the board of Pink the Basin, a nonprofit that provides mammograms to women with no health coverage or limited coverage. Through her activism and participation in a support group, she frequently speaks to other women who were diagnosed under the age of 40, which is younger than the recommended age to receive the annual mammogram. "What we really try to reiterate with the young women who come into our group is that it's not a death sentence," she said. "You can get through this. We've lost our hair. We've had very vulnerable moments and struggles, but it's something you can overcome." This is the State Page. This article is entitled, "Streak of COVID Cases Greater Than 100 Ends After 6 Reports." The total number of new COVID-19 cases in Midland County finally fell below 100. The Midland Health Department reported Tuesday that the number of cases failed to hit triple digits for the first time in 7 reports. The Health Department reported 83 cases reflect lab results from part of Friday, all day Saturday, and part of Sunday. The number of cases this week is 315, which is still a 41.8% increase compared to the same period last week. The Health Department also reported 2,029 active cases, an increase of 55 compared to Monday, and 2,913 recoveries, an increase of 28. The number of COVID-19 related deaths remained at 92. Need a COVID test? Midland Health President and CEO Russell Myers said testing is available 9 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. weekdays at its West Campus. To make an appointment, call 68-NURSE. Because of the number of people testing, that appointment may not happen for a day or two, Myers said. This article is entitled, "Henry's Donate 24.63 Acres to IDEA Permian Basin," from staff reports. IDEA Public Schools' planned expansion in the Permian Basin is progressing through a donation from Midlanders Jim and Paula Henry, according to a press release from IDEA. Through Henry Resources, the couple has made a gift of 24.63 acres of land, which will provide space for a new school and future staff housing. The property, valued at $5 million, is near Bush Tennis Center and the new Chris Davidson Opportunity Park on Briarwood Avenue. "Advancing opportunities and access to education is one of the most important investments we can make in our future," Paula Henry said in the release. The Henry family is happy to be able to help ensure that kids in the Midland community have access to an excellent education that will provide a solid foundation for their success in life. Her husband agreed. "Ensuring that every student receives a high-quality education and families have great schools in their community is critical," Jim Henry said. The land is not the first donation the Henrys have made to IDEA Public Schools. The family donated $2 million to IDEA Permian Basin in 2018 through their foundation. "We are extremely grateful for the generous donation from Jim and Paula Henry, and we look forward to providing another excellent school choice for families in Midland," said Bethany Solis, executive director of IDEA's Permian Basin region, in the release. IDEA Permian Basin believes every child can and will succeed if given the opportunity, and we will provide an additional education option to close the opportunity gap and increase levels of achievement for students and families in Midland. IDEA Public Schools is a network of tuition-free college preparatory public charter schools founded in the Rio Grande Valley in 2000. Currently in Midland, the charter company operates IDEA Travis.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, October 28, 2020. Drive-Through Festival. The Midland County Public Library hosted Fall Festival Saturday afternoon at the parking lot of the downtown branch. For the drive-through trick-or-treat, the library and its community partners provided treats for the kids. Midland County Public Library Foundation gave away books. Early voting continues. Early voting centers for the November 3 general election continues through Friday at 5 voting centers across Midland. County Annex, 2110 North A Street, Wednesday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Calvary Assembly of God, 908 Johnston Street. MCPL Centennial Branch, 2503 West Loop, 250 North. Fairmont Park Church of Christ, 3818 North Midland Drive. St. Paul's Methodist Church, 4501 Thomason Drive. Wednesday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Thursday and Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Early voting totals. Tuesday, 411. Monday, 2,344. Sunday, 917. Saturday, 2,516. Friday, 3,374. Thursday, 2,865. Wednesday, 3,160. October 20, 3,612. October 19, 3,509. October 16, 3,780. October 15, 3,399. October 14, 3,330. October 13, 3,259. Mail-in ballots, 3,145. Total, 39,624. Breaking Bread needs volunteers. These select area volunteer opportunities and events are provided by MSS Connections, a program of MSS made possible by the Warren Charitable Foundation. For more information, visit www.mssconnections.org. Breaking Bread Kitchen Ministry is looking for breakfast truck and kitchen volunteers. Contact Mari at 689-2339. American Red Cross has several virtual volunteer opportunities. Contact Stacy Pickett at 425-7637. Junior Achievement needs virtual volunteers. Contact Shelley at 682-4966. Stephen Porterfield to give online Halloween lecture. The Ellen Noel Art Museum is hosting an online Halloween lecture series on Thursday featuring clothing historian and collector Stephen Porterfield. The Midlander will lecture about the history of Victorian mourning, including the fashionable trend of creating mourning jewelry from human hair, according to the press release. The Halloween special will be posted online at 6 p.m. Thursday on the Ellen Noel Art Museum's website, Facebook, IGTV, and YouTube. UTPB to host Halloween Symposium. Odessa. The third annual Halloween Symposium on Literature, Lore, and More is scheduled for Saturday online at the University of Texas Permian Basin. This year's theme is Witches, Warlocks, and Wizards. Students and professors will present papers on witches from La Llorona to Disney from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. The conference will be entirely online. Up to 250 people can join through Microsoft Teams. Link to presentations, https://tinyurl.com/yxh37jxq. Health Department is providing services. The Midland Health Department is providing clinical services by appointment only. Appointments will be scheduled from 8:15 a.m. to 3:45 p.m. Monday through Friday. To schedule an appointment, Call 681-7613. ACM to host Artist Market. Arts Council of Midland is to host a community market 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. November 7 at 1506 West Illinois Avenue. More than 25 local artists will be in attendance. There also will be live music, food trucks, coffee, and beer. Face masks and social distancing are required. For more information, call 687-1149, email events at acmidland.org, or visit acmidland.org. Gem and Mineral Society plans market. The Midland Gem and Mineral Society will hold an outdoor market 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. November 7 on the grounds of the Society's facilities, 602 South Main Street. Because of COVID-19, the annual event is being limited to just local vendors, who will have gems, jewelry, and geodes for sale. Society members may also demonstrate lapidary arts and wire wrapping skills. Vendor booths will be socially distanced, and there will not be public restrooms available. Attendees will be required to wear face masks.
This is the obituary column, Wednesday, October 28th. Deborah Susan Marzel. Deborah Susan Marzel, 68, of Midland, passed away on Sunday, October 25th. Celebration of Life will be held on Friday, October 30th at 1:30 p.m. at Nellie Picklin Wells Chapel in Midland. Deborah was born on July 4th, 1952, to Ramona Simmons and Tommy Tipton in Ballinger, Texas. She is survived by daughter Tammy Donovan and husband Kevin, son Clint Alford and wife Bridget, son James Mabadi, son Stephen Marzo, daughter Julie Diaz, 10 grandchildren, 3 great-grandchildren, and stepsister Luann Ryan and husband Richard, and uncle John Murray and wife Yvonne. She is preceded in death by her mother, Ramona Dricky, father, Tommy Tipton, stepfather, Paul A. Dricky, sister, Donna Morris, stepbrother, Thomas Dricky, sister, Carol Dricky, and paternal and maternal grandparents. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices. George Doc Rowell. George Doc Rowell, 77, of Midland, passed away October 26th. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, October 29th at Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home in Big Spring. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, October 31st at Nellie Picklin Wells Rosewood Chapel in Big Spring, with burial following at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Miguel Martinez Monares. Miguel Martinez Monares, 80, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, October 24th. Viewing will be Thursday from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel, 405 North Terrell Street. Miguel is survived by his wife, Adelita Monares, and their 5 children, Dinora Lozoya, Ismael Monares, Mike Monares Jr., Paula Monares Romo, and Mary Leon. 1 brother, 2 sisters, and numerous grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren. Yolanda Uretia. Yolanda Uretia, 83, of Cypress, Texas, passed away October 25th. There is no service planned. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, October 28, 2020. Winter makes early entrance. TxDOT treating roads overnight. Under the caption, ice covers the field and track of Joe T. Coleman Field at Odessa High School Tuesday morning. By Royal McGregor. More bad weather and freezing temperatures led to poor driving conditions Tuesday morning as the Odessa Police Department reportedly responded to a dozen collisions made in the city limits. As of 5 p.m. Tuesday, OPD spokesperson Corporal Steve LeSueur said officers responded to a total of 24 collisions. LeSueur also said over the phone that a majority of those early collisions happened near overpasses, as that's where ice accumulates. LaSalle also said of the dozen collisions reported Tuesday morning that none were fatal or life-threatening. The high number of collisions came following a hard freeze warning from the National Weather Service, where temperatures stayed below freezing much of Monday night and Tuesday morning. LeSueur said officers were prepared for a high number of collisions due to inclement weather. It's not uncommon for us to respond to multiple crashes in a short period of time. In weather like this, LeSueur said, the main thing is that people just have to slow down. The Texas Department of Transportation started pre-treating roads Monday morning and will continue to spread granular material until Wednesday morning. TxDOT Odessa District spokesperson Jean Powell said over the phone on Tuesday morning. Powell said crews are working around the clock addressing overpasses, bridges, and troubled spots. Powell also wanted to reiterate to the public to slow down. We are on shift work spreading granular material on overpasses, bridges, and troubled spots, Powell said. We will continue to do that until temperatures get above 32 degrees Fahrenheit and everything thaws out. Matt Salerno, a meteorologist at the National Weather Service in Midland, said over the phone on Tuesday afternoon that mixed precipitation was expected between 8 p.m. to midnight, which he said could include freezing rain, sleet, and snow. The National Weather Service issued multiple alerts for inclement weather across the Permian Basin on Tuesday morning. The first alert hazardous weather outlook was issued at 2:57 a.m. for portions of southeast Mexico, southwest Texas, and western Texas. The hazardous weather outlook could feature frozen rain, sleet, and snow was expected to develop Tuesday across southeast New Mexico and much of west Texas. The hazardous weather outlook remained in effect throughout Tuesday. The second alert winter storm warning was sent at 3:21 a.m. that could lead to up to 7 inches of snow and up to a quarter inch of ice. The warning will remain in effect until 7 a.m. Wednesday. We are expecting freezing temperatures to continue overnight and another round of precipitation coming through, Salerno said. The storm system is still west of here, and it's going to move across the region Tuesday night. Oncor Electric Customer Operations Manager Gus Ortega said Tuesday morning that there were no weather-related outages. He said Oncor Electric is operating normally. If it does cause anything, we are prepared to assist with our outages, Ortega said. The caption reads, icicles form off a pine tree Tuesday in Odessa. Helping Hands. The caption reads, a group of guests warm up inside the Salvation Army shelter Tuesday in Odessa. Temperatures were below 30 degrees as a winter storm move through the area. Nonprofits Help Homeless in Cold by Ruth Campbell and Bob Campbell. Just in the nick of time, Faith Temple Fellowship pastor Donnie Kiker last week got a big donation of cold weather gear from Crossroads Fellowship that he is distributing to all comers at his 1335 East 6th Street Church. The Reverend Kiker said Crossroads gave his nonprofit cooperation sleeping bags, blankets, hand warmers, gloves, toboggans, socks, and underwear for anybody in need to be supplied with free of charge between 8 a.m. and 1 p.m. Sunday through Thursday at the church. I talked to some homeless people yesterday who were concerned about the weather, said Kiker, who operates the Jesus House shelter for 6 men at his church and is renovating a similarly named shelter for 16 women and children to open in January in a former state halfway house at 620 South Grant Avenue. Because of the pandemic, there are a lot of new people on the street, he said. They're out of jobs and don't have places to live. The Salvation Army is staying open all day so they can get help there, and a lot of them are going to libraries and grocery stores. There are a lot in homeless camps that they are very secretive about because they're worried about law enforcement shutting them down. Kiker said homeless people who have sleeping bags and or tents can weather the storm that froze the Permian Basin Monday night and kept it unpleasant all day Tuesday, with temperatures in the 20s and a sheet of ice that made it dangerous to drive or walk. National Weather Service meteorologist Samantha Subert said late Tuesday morning that things were in a lull, but it was expected to pick back up in the afternoon and evening. As of 8 a.m. Tuesday, the NWS had measured 0.02 inches of a frozen rain mix. The biggest problem is when they get to drinking and they get outside and don't know they're getting cold because their blood gets thin, Kiker said. The last three guys, whose bodies I had to go identify, had gotten drunk, stayed outside, and passed out. If they just stay in the tent or the sleeping bag and don't get out, they will be all right. With limited resources and strong demand, the Salvation Army is doing its best to get to yes when it comes to housing those whose shelter during the cold weather. Jesus House is also doing its part thanks to donations from Crossroads Fellowship Church. Captain Juan Gomez, who heads the local Salvation Army with his wife, Captain Clara Gomez, said Tuesday that he had a meeting with the staff Monday in preparation for the coming cold, snow, sleet, and rain. Along with the weather, the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted the Salvation Army in how many people it can serve at a time. They met with the shelter monitor and some of the volunteers who had started to come back slowly after leaving due to the pandemic, Gomez said. We were faced, of course, with the struggle of social distancing, but trying to be able to house the guests that would come in as a result of the weather, Gomez said. They decided to move some things around in the building, mainly in the dining area, and lay out some cots. Another area also was used. The bed count is lower than normal, but they did put roughly 20 extra cots out Monday, Gomez said. That gave us the ability to bring in more guests out of the cold, Gomez said. Normally, Gomez said, they would have 35 beds to 16 beds for women and 3 family rooms, but because of the social distancing, they have had to reduce the bed count by roughly 50%, mainly because some of the beds are bunk beds and they have to adhere to the 6-foot social distancing guidelines. He said there were about 16 men in the dorms and 8 in the women's dorms. It hurts our volunteers and our staff when we have to say no, knowing that we have an empty bed, but we can't put people in those beds because of the pandemic, Gomez said. It is the safest option for those who are coming to our doors. However, our staff is keen on trying to find a way to say yes, Gomez said. That is our goal. My staff is constantly working with other agencies in the area and partners, and they try to help guests move on quickly if they can. On Monday, Gomez said there was a mother with 4 children who needed a shelter. His shelter manager was able to move things around and make it feasible for her to come. He added that the annual Red Kettle fundraiser is coming up and the Salvation Army has lost 2 of its other fundraisers because of COVID-19. The Salvation Army has had to adjust to doing things differently in the current health conditions. There is no preset understanding of the way things should go or are going to go, Gomez said. Gomez said when he and his wife arrived to Odessa, they decided to use the word guest instead of client. The word guest, he said, provides a level of understanding that those who come through the Salvation Army doors are entitled to a level of comfort, but it also means there are rules to follow. A guest can't open doors they're not welcome to. This becomes difficult because of the pandemic. Our guests really have to maintain a level of understanding that though we want to be able to provide them with a certain level of comfort, we're not able to become because of the pandemic, Gomez said. MCHOC Partnering for Healthcare. OANews@OAOA.com. Medical Center Health System and Odessa College announced a partnership to provide increased healthcare support during the COVID-19 pandemic. The partnership was based on the MCH On-Call program, formally launched October 19th, the first day of the fall 2 sessions of classes. MCH CEO Russell Tippin said he's excited about the partnership and what it will mean for the community. This healthcare partnership will ensure that students and employees will have 24/7 access to healthcare professionals, a designated ambulatory community navigator, designated testing and consultation rooms at the MCH Urgent Care Facility on West University Boulevard or 42nd Street, and discounted COVID-19 RNA testing, $15 for students and $25 for employees. Free testing is available for those who qualify. If an OC employee or student is not feeling well or would like to schedule a test for COVID-19, he/she can access the MCH on-call program by calling 432-640-6262 or emailing mchon-call@ECHD.org. The service will provide access to nurse communication to listen to the person's symptoms, help navigate care, and follow up with him/her, a news release said. While OC will continue to maintain the current protocol of notifying either the Human Resource Department or Student Services to report exposures, symptoms, or positive test results, this partnership will ensure that the OC family has a direct 24/7 access to a medical professional, the release said. From the front page, 271 days. For 271 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through August 30th, the city has spent $60,283.18 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. Quick hits. Drive-through trunk or treat. The bridge on East Yukon Road has scheduled a drive-through trunk or treat from 6:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. today. There will be candy prizes, raffles, crafts, games, pumpkin patch. Call 363-0900 or visit www.facebook.com/TheBridgeOdessa or TheBridgeOdessa.org. Pumpkin Carving Event. The Second Baptist Church, 711 East 17th Street, has scheduled a pumpkin carving event from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. today. Bring your own pumpkin to carve or paint. Call 337-8381 or visit 2bcodessa.com or www.facebook.com/2bcodessa. Trunk or treat. Agape Dream Center Church, 1618 East Murphy Street, has scheduled a trunk or treat from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. today on the church east parking lot. For more information, call 337-1745 or visit www.facebook.com/Agape Dream Center. Luncheon. The Odessa Chamber of Commerce has scheduled the Entrepreneur of the Year Award and Business Hall of Fame Luncheon featuring a special tribute to Congressman Mike Conway at 11 a.m. Thursday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center, 305 East 5th Street. The 2020 Business Hall of Fame inductees are Phil Poschi, Rex Coe, Roy Gillian, Barn Door Steakhouse and South 40 Catering Company, Rodney Hurt Insurance Services, and Ron Kirby, CPA. Tables are limited. Sponsorships are available. To register or to sponsor, or for more information, call Lynn Van Amberg at 337-7862. Email lynnva@odessachamber.com or visit odessachamber.com or tinyurl.com/y64y39b6. From staff reports. Therapy Dogs. The caption reads, volunteers from Therapy Dogs International, chapter number 326, participated in the drive-through trunk-or-treat Saturday at the Midland County Public Library. Members participating were Stephanie Evans, Reba McBride, Sherry Hensley, and Nancy Henderson. free mobile COVID-19 test. OA News at OAOA.com. The City of Odessa is in partnership with the University of Texas Permian Basin, has pushed up the free mobile COVID-19 testing time due to the weather to begin at 10 a.m. today at Slater Park parking lot, 1001 West 38th Street. Health provider. Mammograms still important. Pink the Basin by Ruth Campbell. Despite the prevalence of COVID-19, there is still worry of breast cancer. During October, Medical Center Hospital is providing mammograms for $99. Supervisor for the Center of Women's Imaging, Becky Wiscombe, said there is a lot of traffic this year, leading to the moniker of Mammo Madness. Wiscombe said the Image Center wants women who don't have insurance or are unable to pay for mammograms at full price to come in. It is aimed at underinsured or uninsured women and includes the 3D mammogram with a reading for $99. We have a lot of people take advantage of that, Wiscombe said. At the beginning of April and the first part of May, their volume dropped substantially due to COVID-19. People were very scared, as were we. We were still in that unknown stage of how are we going to handle people coming in? How are things going to change going forward? I think once we understood that we needed to do and we were on board with the CDC guidelines, we understood how we were to handle patients, the extra cleaning that needed to be done between patients, Wiscombe said. Everyone wears masks and everything is wiped down. I think that helped us to understand better, and people are starting to come back now that it's safer, Wiscombe said. The mammography machines were cleaned after every patient before COVID, but it was just a general wipe down of the entire machine. Now we wipe down the door handles, the machines we are working on, the countertop, the door handles going in and out of the dressing rooms, the dressing room benches that the patients will sit on, and it's between every patient, so we want to keep everyone very safe. Of course, we wear gloves when we do patients now, Wiscombe said, and everyone wears masks. It's a lot more cleaning, but it's a lot safer for us and for our patients, so that's why we do it, Wiscombe said. She added that gloves don't impact how they perform mammograms. They're very tight, so it's just like your own skin. It doesn't really affect anything as far as positioning or the outcome of the mammogram. But it keeps us safe, and I think the patients appreciate that as well, because we're not actually touching them either with our hands, Wiscombe said. Women should start having mammograms at age 40, according to the American College of Radiology guidelines. If there is a significant family history, a mother or a grandmother, then Wiscombe said it should be 10 years prior to their mother's diagnosis. If you have a genetic marker for breast cancer, that's going to tie into that significant family history of your mother, grandmother, aunts, and cousins. They'll do the genetic marker to see if you have that genetic predisposition as well. And usually, the oncology doctors will tell you then when you should start your mammograms, Wiscombe said. If you're younger than 40 and feel something, you should get it checked out, she added. It may be just an ultrasound, it may be a mammogram, but you need to get checked no matter what age if you feel something different, Wiscombe said. Results from a screening mammogram should be available in the form of a letter within a week, she said. The only reason there would be a holdup is if we're waiting for outside priors, like if you had a mammogram in Lubbock and we need to see those images in order to compare them with what we've done to see if there's been a change. Then there could be a little bit of a delay in your reading, Wiscombe said. For diagnostic mammograms, when you come in and have a problem, Dr. Gage Hicks talks to you the day of the exam, so you get an on-the-spot reading from Dr. Hicks that day, Wiscombe said. A lot of biopsies are done the same day. He wants to get them in and get that diagnosis for them so they can get on to treatment if they need to, Wiscombe said. Nationally, 1 in 8 women is diagnosed with breast cancer. In Ector County and Midland County, statistics show that 4 of 5 women do not get their mammograms after 40, as they should. According to a column by Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Nursing Officer Carol Cates, Pink the Basin has made it a mission to fund mammograms for those who cannot afford them and to raise awareness in everyone who should get one, her column said. The funds they raise also help pay for other breast cancer diagnostics and prosthetics for those who have mastectomies, Cates wrote. Unfortunately, the pandemic did not stop that. We would have hoped that would change, but we've seen a lot of breast cancers in the past couple of months, actually. I don't know if it's because women have waited to come in and that it's kind of developed a little more. That's why it's so important to go ahead and get your screening exams done so things can be caught quickly, Wiscombe said. She noted that the 3D mammograms are clearer than the 2D, and with fibrocystic breast, women don't necessarily have to come back for another exam. As a side note, Wiscombe says she's not really sure how they devised that Mammo Madness line. It's been several years now, she said. I think we were looking for something to do for our ladies, some kind of an event we could do to promote breast cancer awareness, and we may have found it online or something, just kind of a general term that people were using, and it just came about, Mammo Madness. We used to do from 9 o'clock until midnight the $99 mammograms, but that just kind of evolved into the entire month of October instead of just one day of the month. We do it the entire month now, Wiscombe said. MCH Community Relations Manager Susan Thornton said the Imaging Center will also work with women to get mammograms the other 11 months of the year. Police searching for hit-and-run suspect. OA News at OAOA.com. The Odessa Police Department is reportedly looking for a person involved in a hit-and-run investigation. The reported hit-and-run happened around 1:31 p.m. Sunday in the 2700 block of North Dixie Boulevard, an OPD press release stated. Investigation reportedly showed the driver of a white Ford F-150 collided with a parked white GMC and left the scene without meeting necessary legal requirements. OPD has released a photo of the person and the truck at tinyurl.com/Y36NRHZA. Anyone with information about the hit and run is asked to contact hit and run investigator T. Yelly at 432-335-5759 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 20-00 1-800-981-9083. Obituaries. Raymond A. Dominguez, Odessa. Raimundo Raymond A. Dominguez, 84 of Odessa, passed away Wednesday, October 21, 2020, at Odessa Regional Medical Center. Funeral services will be held on Friday, October 30, 2020, at 1 p.m. at St. Elizabeth and Selton Catholic Church, followed by Sunset Memorial Gardens. He was born on January 3, 1936, in Fort Stockton, Texas, to Emilio and Anita Dominguez. As the second oldest, Raymond did not have an opportunity for much of an education, which led to his strong work ethic as a young age and continued for all of his life. He married his me, honey, Otilia Dominguez on December 6, 1959. The love Raymond had for the love of his life always remained the same since the first day he laid eyes on her. They could never be apart and to this day loved each other like no other. They raised three daughters, Reve, Roxy, Gina, and one son, Raymond. Raymond is preceded in death by his parents, Emilio and Anita Dominguez, two brothers, Carlos and Mike. He is survived by his loving wife, Otilia Dominguez, daughter Reve Hernandez and Albert, daughter Gina Holder and Michael, daughter Roxy Dominguez, son Raymond Dominguez and Sammy, five brothers, five sisters, eight grandchildren, and seven great-grandchildren. Raymond will be greatly missed for everything he was, his infectious smile and personality. Guadalupe Lupi Smith, Odessa. Guadalupe Lupi Smith, age 84, passed away on October 24, 2020. She was born in 1935 in El Paso, Texas, to the late Gilberto and Pascuala Moreno Lupi, married her love, Grover Cleveland Smith, who preceded her in death in 2013. She is survived by daughter Jennifer Curry and husband David, daughter Stephanie Griffin and husband Scott, brother Gilberto Moreno Jr., and sisters Bertha Borrego and Simona Trejo. Her adored grandchildren, Catherine Elizabeth Katie Curry and Emma Rose Griffin and Bradley Griffin, and many other relatives. Preceded in death are brothers Bernie Moreno, Paul Moreno, and sister Anna Ramirez. She was a kind, generous, and forgiving. She never minced words, which most people eventually appreciated. Our warmest appreciation to her close friends, Bridget Cases, Kendall Wright, and Dolores and Javier Duran. Memorial contributions may be made to St. Mary's Catholic Church, 612 East 18th Street, Odessa, Texas, 79761. Rosary will be recited at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Odessa at 10 a.m. on Thursday, October 29, 2020, with Mass to follow at 11 a.m. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Death notices. Cecilia Benavides from Odessa. Cecilia Benavides, 70 of Odessa, died Monday, October 19, 2020, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. on Thursday, October 29, 2020, at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Carolyn Elaine Fox, Odessa. Carolyn Elaine Fox, 81, of Odessa, died Monday, October 19, 2020, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m. on Thursday, October 29, 2020, at First Baptist Church. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by Frank W. Wilson, Funeral Directors of Odessa. Mary Frances Fran Martin Thomas, Kerrville. Mary Frances Fran Martin Thomas, 88, of Kerrville, died Thursday, October 22, 2020, in Kerrville. Graveside service is scheduled for 11 a.m. October 29, 2020, at Kermit Cemetery. Dudley Mullins is officiating. Arrangements are made by Family Service Funeral Parlor of Kermit. Lucky Lee Teagues, Kermit. Lucky Lee Teagues, 60, of Kermit, died Sunday, October 25, 2020, in Kermit. Funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m. October 29, 2020, at Family Services Funeral Chapel. Cremation will follow. Eddie Whitfield is officiating. Arrangements are by Family Services Funeral Parlor of Kermit. George Doc Rowell, Midland. George Doc Rowell, 77, of Midland, died Monday, October 26, 2020, in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. October 31, 2020, at Natalie Pickle and Welsh Rosewood Chapel in Big Springs. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. Arrangements are by Natalie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. George K. Fugit, Odessa. George K. Fugit, 89, died Saturday, October 24, 2020, in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery. Joshua McBee, Mena, Arkansas. Joshua McBee, 23, died Sunday, October 25, 2020, in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Rosa Phillips, Odessa. Rosa Phillips, 93, died Saturday, October 24, 2020, in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Jasmine Marie Melendez, Midland. Jasmine Marie Melendez, 15, died Thursday, October 22, 2020, in Dallas, Texas. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Jeffrey Gregory, Midland. Jeffrey Gregory, 60, died Saturday, October 24, 2020, in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery, Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.